From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, live from the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, where Bill Clinton takes center stage tonight. The great centrist ended welfare as we knew it, embraced deregulation, triangulation. After 8 years in W-imposed exile, progressive Democrats hope for something quite different from President Obama. Carpe diem, seize the day, sweep the decks, a full liberal agenda. They didn't get it. Guantanamo's still open. No prosecution for Wall Street's bad boys. No single-payer health plan. Republicans yell socialist, but progressives don't see that. This hour on Point, the souls of the party, progressive, liberal, centrist, and what they see in an Obama second term. You can join the conversation. Democrats, what's your stripe now? Progressive, centrist, blue dog? And for all, what stripe have you seen in Barack Obama? What White House politics would you expect from an Obama second term? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, and you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Bill Clinton later tonight. Last night, a whole string of people speaking. Here was the Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick saying Democrats need to be stronger, show some backbone if they want President Obama to win.
If we want to win elections in November and keep our country moving forward, if we want to earn the privilege to lead, my message is this. It's time for Democrats to grow a backbone and stand up for what we believe.
Grow a backbone and stand up. We'll go in a minute to Mother Jones and Salon and more, but first on the Charlotte lineup tonight, Jerry Seib, Gerald Seib, executive Washington editor of the Wall Street Journal. Jerry, Bill Clinton on the ticket, the star tonight. Why Bill Clinton tonight?
Well, first of all, he's the greatest political performance artist of our time, in my opinion. And so he can deliver a message. He distills a message. He delivers it. He also happens to deliver a message to middle-class voters and to people who think they have been shafted by the system. And that's, I kind of think, the unifying theme tonight. You know, you've got Elizabeth Warren, who's probably to the left on the political spectrum, and Bill Clinton, who's seen to the right in the Democratic spectrum. But what I think unites them is the ability to speak to people who think they've been dispossessed or left out of the action on the economic front, and they know how to talk to those people, and I think that's the message that's supposed to come out.
Bill Clinton, a great political performer. Barack Obama, no mean political performer.
No.
When he's on his game.
Right.
Now, of course, he's going to talk tomorrow night, but what in particular does he need from Bill Clinton that he can't, or at least tonight, won't be doing himself?
Yeah, you know, I think you've seen what he wants from Bill Clinton in an ad that they're running, the one in which Bill Clinton essentially says, you know, we should stick with Barack Obama's economic message because it's kind of like the one that worked for me. And, you know, there is a kind of go back to the 90s, let's see, the unemployment rate was low, growth was high, and the budget was balanced. What didn't we like about that? And Bill Clinton's going to say, by the way, that all happened when Democrats were in power, so that's the ticket, and that's where Barack Obama wants to take you once we're out of this ditch that we're in right now.
Funny, it's a funny thing. Your newspaper, Wall Street Journal, your editorial page, not your news columns, your editorial page, though, jumping on Bill Clinton saying, you know, their editorial, Clinton learned from Bill and his mistakes and changed policies. Obama hasn't. Paul Ryan, in Iowa today, Ames, Adele, Iowa, praising Bill Clinton,
yeah.
You know, like the day of his big speech down here. What's up with both of these?
I'm not so sure I remember that from the 90s so clearly. But, you know, look, I mean, Bill Clinton did adjust his policies in the sense that, you know, he
after
figured
94,
out. After 94, he had to triangulate,
Gingrich,
right?
Revolution.
Gingrich Revolution, lost control of the House. You know, and he did probably move to the center. But I think Bill Clinton, you know, Bill Clinton came out of the Democratic Leadership Council. He was always kind of there.
Yeah.
You know, Barack Obama is hard to pigeonhole. I don't know what to call Barack Obama, and I think a lot of people do. The people who work for Barack Obama call him a pragmatist. Now, the people who oppose him call him a socialist. You get the pick, and you know, I'm kind of confused.
What do you expect from Barack Obama tomorrow night? Can he, you know, in 08, his ball of fire was so big he could kind of roll over the niceties. Can he do that again tomorrow?
You know, we'll see. I think he can deliver a speech, and he can deliver a speech in this setting. We've seen it before, and I think he'll do it again. The message, I think, is going to be essentially you have a big choice. You know, that's been the effort of the Obama campaign for 6 months has been to define this not as a referendum on Bill Clinton, but as a choice between a vision.
A referendum on Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. Wrong president. But a choice between.
The Democrats will take that tonight.
Well, tonight. It'll be good. A choice between a vision of what government ought to be in the 21st century on the Republican side and what Democrats think it ought to be in the 21st century on their side, and it's a big difference. And I think that Barack Obama thinks that difference actually works to his benefit. And that he's going to try to define that difference tomorrow night. And he's probably, and he's right. It is a big choice, and that's to the Democrats' benefit because they don't want it to be a referendum on Barack Obama.
Jerry Seib, Wall Street Journal, great to have you with us.
Thanks. Happy to be with you, Tom.
Let's listen. We're going to hear a couple of big progressive voices in just a minute. Let's hear from, what, the great centrist, Bill Clinton? In the ad that Jerry mentioned, here it is, came out, about a week ago, former President Bill Clinton endorsing President Obama in this Obama campaign television ad.
This is a clear choice. The Republican plan is to cut more taxes on upper-income people and go back to deregulation. That's what got us in trouble in the first place. President Obama has a plan to rebuild America from the ground up, investing in innovation, education, and job training. It only works if there is a strong middle class. That's what happened when I was president. We need to keep going with his plan.
Big Bill Clinton throwing his big arm around big Barack Obama. Hey, we're all just one big happy family here, and that will no doubt be the message tonight. Let's go to party politics. We'll go to a centrist in a minute. First, some progressive perspective, two big voices. Joan Walsh, editor-at-large at Salon, woman of the left. She's out with a new book, What's the Matter with White People? Why We Long for a Golden Age That Never Was. Joan, it's great to have you again. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
And from Mother Jones, David Korn is here, Washington bureau chief there, man of the left. His new book is Showdown, the inside story of how Obama fought back against Boehner, Cantor, and the Tea Party. David Korn, great to have you as well.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Our listeners listen very closely, and they give us all kinds of feedback all the time. Let me share some with you and help us find our way through these woods. Here's Chris. He says on Facebook, look, jobs and the economy, that's it. Nothing else matters. If you can't get reelected without those because, the economy is terrible. That's his view. Jobs and economy, that's what he wants to hear. Here's Tom K. I'm not going to get what I want from Rockefeller Republican Obama. That's how he sees this socialist. Rockefeller Republican, but I have to support him when the alternative is thermonuclear class warfare and a return to 1900. But you see how he sees the president. And then here's Drew Tuffer. Says the Democrats are traitors to the liberal ethic. If they truly cared about peace, life, and freedom, they would not be supporting the continuing murder of civilians, two of them American citizens, drone and more, the renewal of the Patriot Act, the persecution of whistleblowers, and a continual and ongoing betrayal of working class interests to accommodate Wall Street and the establishment. David Korn, everybody wants unity here because it's neck and neck and they want to win.
Right.
But under the covers, we've got a range here, and you can see it in the comments of our listeners coming in here.
Well, in Tampa, I talked to a number of Republican strategists, and they all said more or less the same thing, that Barack Obama is the great unifier of the Republican Party, which has its own ideological divisions. You know, there are splits within the Democratic world that have long been there. You know, we fought them, I think, pretty viciously, in the Clinton years. And I think a lot of that has taken care of itself in many ways. But also, given the political context of the moment, I think that a lot of those divisions are sort of being pushed aside, suppressed, if you will, because there's something greater at hand, which is whether or not to let the Tea Party Republicans and Mitt Romney have total control of the U.S. government. So if you don't like the tax cut deal that Obama cut to really gain a second stimulus, I think there are a lot of progressive elements to the tax cut, but I understand
extending the Bush tax cuts.
I understand why some people didn't fully understand that, and I think there was a messaging issue on the Obama side. But if you don't, like that idea, and you rather have a political fight, you're not going to be better off if Romney's negotiating with Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. So a lot of, there are times to have these passionate arguments about civil liberties, about what type of foreign policy to have, what to do about Iran, and so on. But I think there's a lot more unity in some of the big economic issues when the political debate has become so stark.
So polarized. Joan, how do you see what's at stake in this? What's driving? I mean, you can feel it around here. No, everybody wants to talk unity here.
Yes.
There's still some cracks in that. There's history. People have their own, starting points and opinions and backgrounds. But what's at stake for the Democrats, in your view?
People don't want to go. People lived through 8 years of Mitt Romney's platform. They lived through tax cuts and deregulation. They did not grow jobs. And I think the thing about, we can all talk all day because it's so much fun to talk about Clinton-Obama tension, but the real message here is that there's no tension between them when it comes to an economic
program. Not here, not tonight.
Not here, not tonight, because they have finally come together to say, look, we tried Mitt Romney economics. It was George W. Bush. We had no job growth. We destroyed the surplus, and I think people really are on the same page when it comes. I, you know, I, yes, Elizabeth Warren is of the left, but Elizabeth Warren is also somebody who has articulated Barack Obama's message in some ways better than he did when she gave her whole speech about you didn't do this on your own. I think that's the message that President Clinton delivers. That's the message that Barack Obama delivers. That's the message that Elizabeth Warren delivers.
You're following the polls. I mean, you can. We were in Tampa. There's Republicans there, and they can taste it. They can taste it all.
Yeah.
House,
yeah.
Senate, White House. On the other hand, you know, I flew down here with a Democratic fundraiser was on the plane, yeah. And well, maybe we can get the House back here. You know, maybe we can turn it the other way. But what about the downside? What's on the line, Joan?
Oh, I think if they take the White House and they take the Senate, I think we really do go backwards. And I think there's no plan.
Is it a real possibility?
I think it's always a possibility. Things are so close. They're so volatile. I mean, I think that Todd Akin and the insanity around contraception served the Democrats a real gift. And the women's vote has become so much more important. And the idiocy of the way that they talk about sex and contraception in women's bodies. I think people are really galvanized by that.
And David Short, we got a break. But in a second term, the same Barack Obama, in terms of his political stripes, or liberated to do something more, something different, something that might satisfy our progressive correspondents here online.
We've got all. I think Jerry Seib had it right earlier. In doing my book, I think Obama is a progressive-minded fellow, but in an operational sense, is a pragmatist and tries to maximize the policy outcomes he can get. Now, it's going to be harder.
Hold it there, David. We'll come
Congress.
Right back. We got to take a break right here. The Democratic Party's political stripes are what we're looking at tonight. And Bill Clinton coming up. I'm Tom Ashbrook in Charlotte. This is On Point. We'll be right back. This is On Point in Charlotte this week for the Democratic National Convention. That is not Charlotte. That is the height of the Occupy Wall Street movement right in New York City. And that phrase became very, very familiar. Now, everybody's pulling together. Polls are very close in the presidential race. Democrats want to see their man in. Republicans in Tampa can taste it as well. We're talking tonight about the Democratic Party's political stripes now, what the party wants from a second Obama term beyond that victory. And you can feel the longing for that here in Charlotte. And what Obama might give. You can join the conversation. Your Democrats, are you a Bill Clinton Democrat, a Barack Obama Democrat? Is there a difference? What is it? And do you see President Obama as a practical centrist, a hard-driving progressive, something else? Did you think he would leave Gitmo open, double down in Afghanistan, let Wall Street walk, go single payer, send in the drones? Does any of that matter in this campaign season? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Lots of unity in Charlotte, but not 100%. Los Angeles Mayor and DNC Chairman Antonio Villaraigosa held a vote this afternoon on an amendment reinserting language on God and on Jerusalem as Israel's capital into the Democratic Party platform. He was visibly surprised when the voices opposed to the amendment here in Charlotte seemed about as strong as those in favor of the yes vote he was calling for. After calling for the vote three times, he declared the motion adopted and was booed by members of his party crowd.
I'll do that one more time. All those delegates in favor say aye. All those delegates opposed say no. In the opinion of the chair, two-thirds have voted in the affirmative. The motion is adopted and the platform has been amended as shown on the screen.
Kind of sounds like a jump ball, but he's the chairman, and you know how that goes. There it is on the floor today in Charlotte. David Korn is with us this hour, author of Showdown, Mother Jones, Washington Bureau Chief. Joan Walsh is here, editor-at-large of Salon, author of What's the Matter with White People. And joining us as well in Charlotte right now, Mr. Center-Left, Simon Rosenberg, president and founder of the New Democrat Network, a centrist think tank and advocacy group. He ran for the chairmanship of the DNC in 2005. I worked on the presidential campaigns of Bill Clinton and Michael Dukakis. Simon Rosenberg, thanks a lot for being here.
Good to be here, Tom.
So, where are you? You're center left. You're the heir to the Democratic Leadership Council. You're an old style Bill Clinton, post 94 centrist. What's your, or is it a new century and everything's different?
I think I want to echo what's been said by David and Joan is that there's a remarkable amount of unity at this convention, and this is my seventh convention. I've been at conventions where there was not a lot of unity. I think Democrats are used to fighting with each other. And I think what is surprising in this convention is how little rancor and fighting there is. I mean, I worked for Bill Clinton, but I also supported Barack Obama in the primaries in 2007, and so I'm sort of perhaps a hybrid, Tom.
Can you really be a Bill Clinton Democrat and a Elizabeth Warren Democrat at the same time? I mean, Bill Clinton's administration was one that helped bring in deregulation. Agreed. And here's Elizabeth Warren, who's, you know, clean up Wall Street has been her big campaign, and a lot of people want to see that.
I think the unifying theme, though, among people that may disagree on smaller things is this idea that Democrats and the country need a plan to deal with the vast changing economic circumstances of the country and around the world. I mean, if you look back at Tampa, Republicans never mentioned globalization. They didn't talk about the big structural change in the economy. They didn't mention about declining wages and the slow job growth. It was as if it was 1982 and nothing had happened in the world over the last 25 years. I think that what's very strong about where the Democrats are now, what unites the Barack Obama, the Bill Clinton, and Elizabeth Warren Democrats, is that we're trying to forge a plan that's responsive to the economic challenges that we face today, that's going to restore the growth that we saw under Clinton in the 1990s. And I do think that one of the more interesting debates that we've all had, I think, over the years is that Clinton was derided often by the left when he was president. I was a Clinton guy in those days. But look at the outcomes of his presidency, right? We went from huge deficits to big surpluses. We saw median income skyrocket. We saw, you know, welfare. We saw people leave the welfare rolls. It was 8 years of extraordinary growth, and I think Democrats learned a lot from his presidency, and we're a smarter and wiser party now.
What was learned? I mean, the Wall Street Journal, and of course, they're from Mitt Romney. But they're saying today, Barack Obama didn't learn it. Bill Clinton triangulated. He compromised. He made a lot of deals. He was more Republican than the Republicans sometimes after his whacking in 94. They say 2010 didn't teach Barack Obama that lesson. What do you say, Simon?
I don't agree with that. I mean, I think circumstances are different now. I think the Republicans as a party have changed dramatically. I think back in those days, Bill Clinton could work with Republicans. I mean, part of the premise of the third way in those days was that reasonable people from both parties could come together and find a compromise in the middle to move the country forward. That whole premise breaks down when one side isn't reasonable. And I think the Republicans have really taken themselves out of the game, and Barack has had to do what he can on his own without willing partners to do the right thing for the country over the last 3.5 years.
Joan Walsh, here's Ross Douthat, that kind of conservative columnist in the New York Times today, and he said, saying that the Democratic Party, he says, has had an extremely difficult time since its 08 landslide, Obama won. Their leaders haven't figured out what liberalism should stand for in an age of budget cuts and fiscal cliffs. And that is a challenge for everybody. But we heard a lot here in the hall just over our shoulder, and Nancy Pelosi's down there right now speaking, about investment. That's public investment. That's dollars. Dollars are scarce, or is it not a challenge?
Well, you know, I do think, and I do come at this from the left, I was disappointed in Barack Obama as he started his presidency, and he continued to look for accommodation with the right. He continued to look for partners where he couldn't find them. And he did, I think, legitimize a lot of their rhetoric around the deficit being, you know, he used that awful language about, well, you know, we're like a family and you've got to tighten your belt.
A family budget.
A family budget. That's not true, actually. When the family is tightening its belt, the government should actually be spending, and he knows that and he
Keynesian
believes that.
101.
But he took on some of their rhetoric, and I think he wound up paying for it. I think what's different now is that I think that he's talking about it in a different way. I think that he is borrowing or has always shared Clintonian themes about inclusion and about growth. But I think he's a little bit more willing to talk about the role of government in doing these things together.
I mean, last night there was plenty of that talk. David Corn, though, what about this? Liberalism, what does it stand for in an age of budget cuts and fiscal cliffs?
I don't think he knows what he's talking about. I think it's a talk.
Enlighten the world.
Well, because I think if you've read any of the major speeches that Barack Obama has given in the last year or two, prior to what he's going to say tomorrow night, he has a very strongly articulated progressive view, particularly if we're talking about economics. You mentioned it a moment ago, about having to make investments in education, infrastructure, science, having a balanced approach to the deficit in terms of not slashing, but making some cuts, but also raising taxes on the well-to-do and having, you know, a sort of a very gradual glide path towards a more balanced budget. And while preserving things like Pell Grants and you know, and medical and scientific.
All the rest,
but the outlays are big.
And what is it, 23, 4% of GDP now?
Yeah, the outlays are big in part because we're in our, you know, we were coming out of a recession near depression, and so it's unfair to judge these outlays compared to what were happening in the 90s. But I think there is no question now that there is a general core progressive approach to the problem at hand and to what needs to be done in the years ahead. And I think Obama, you know, while I've disagreed with some of the things he's done, and I think he's made some messaging mistakes that Joan talked about a moment ago, has a very strong core message on this front. And it doesn't take a lot to look at it. Look at the speech he gave critiquing the Ryan budget. I mean, he has a very, I think, integrated, self-integrated view of where to go that is completely opposite from the Romney-Ryan approach. Well, and it's progressive. It's left-leaning. There's no doubt about it.
Joan, if he's strong and progressive, we're going to have a lot of people on the left who are say hallelujah, but does that leave us back in the paralysis? We saw what happened last summer. Couldn't get through to an agreement with Boehner. Boehner blames him. He blames Boehner. You know, everybody, both parties go back and forth, but it didn't happen. Bill Clinton went for triangulation, went deep to the center, and made those deals. So how can Obama be a strong progressive and make the deals he may have to make if it's still a Republican House and maybe more?
I think it's going to be very disappointing and very tough if it's still a Republican House. But I think that he has to articulate the role of government and not roll over for Boehner. I mean, I agree with Simon. There's just no comparison with Clinton because he has no partners. I mean, it's just shocking when you think of the extent to which Bill Clinton was a triangulator and was a conciliator and did borrow some Republican ideas and some themes. I was ambivalent about welfare reform. I thought it was necessary, but I thought the bill that was passed in 96 was a little bit harsh, but whatever. He also increased the earned income tax credit, which was a Republican idea. It was a Milton Friedman idea. Jerry Ford signed the bill to give low-wage workers.
Richard
Nixon loved it. To give low-wage workers a little bit more money and to be an alternative to welfare. Now, that Republican idea, they want to cut. They are disowning their own ideas. So there's no middle in which to meet them.
So Simon Rosenberg, does fiscal challenge mean nothing in terms of a challenge to liberalism? Can you just sail on?
No, I think that the president has proposed a balanced approach. I mean, I think the major difference between what Bill Clinton did in the 90s and what Barack Obama is doing now is that the economy is just fundamentally different, right? Before the recession and the financial collapse and the housing crisis, and, you know, we already had years of no wage and income growth. We had slow job creation. We've had American workers now have been down for 12 years, and they're looking for government to do more, not less. And so I think the tension in many ways inside the Democratic Party is that workers and people want more, not less.
Well, and the people lining up with the GOP don't want more. The GOP is very clear about that, and Mitt Romney's showing, you know,
although
just about as strong as Barack Obama.
Except in Tampa last week, they dramatically de-emphasized the deficit reduction part of their narrative. It was buried in the whole week. Paul Ryan barely talked about it. And the reason why is that it doesn't work politically.
But
people want jobs and growth.
Government out, government out.
Agreed.
That was
the smaller government. But I think they're wrong on this, and that's why I think they're going to lose the election. I think that what's different now is that Barack's balanced approach, needed investments, the things that all economists agree create growth over the long term, with a down payment on the making sure that we deal with the deficit over time as we recover, is economically sound, politically smart, and is, I think, why Barack's going to win the election.
Simon Rosenberg, Joan Walsh, David Cohen with us. Lots of listeners calling in. Let's begin to bring them in. Sacramento, California. Bill is calling. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. What are you thinking?
I was wondering what your panel there thinks that the president's going to propose for jobs for that issue when the unemployment rate was at 5.1 when he took office, and now it's over 8, and it's not gone down to 5 again, and the debt is doubled.
Well, I mean, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month or something like that when he came in. So, I mean, we know the deluge was falling down on him. But it's a fair question what this president is going to do about jobs now, and then what he would do in his second term, what would be different from his first term, David Korn.
Let's not forget that after the debt ceiling debacle, which almost all middle-of-the-road observers blamed on the Republicans who did what had never been done before, held it hostage, and, you know, lowered our credit rating. After that, what did the president do when he was no longer being held hostage? He came out with a very, you know, vigorous jobs bill. He campaigned for it over and over again. He didn't get a lot of it through because of Republican obstructionism, but he did win, you know, by sticking to his guns on the payroll tax cut extension. You know, even Senate Republicans eventually said to the House Republicans, you got to yield on this. That was one sort of way that he can move forward, and you know, if he should win and still face Republican intransigence.
So those are things he did, and they, you know, and they saved us from a worse fate, granted. But yes. Bill's question is, what's he going to do to make more jobs now? And he may be up again, Joan, against that Republican opposition once more.
Well, I think it is. It's very tough if you wind up with a Republican Party that will not compromise at all. You know, when he part of his jobs bill was giving money to states so they could keep cops and firefighters and teachers on the job, and Mitch McConnell said, "Oh, we can't do that. That's a bailout."
But is that a good enough answer? It's going to be tough because he may be facing that, and I'm hearing from some voters who are saying, I can't bear to go back into that standoff. I'd rather,
Wait a second, Tom. We've got to be mature about this. Because, we live in a system. It's not a parliamentary system where the prime minister can basically get any policy passed.
Certainly
not. We have a system that is divided government, that is really divided government. And if the president, is up against Republicans who will use the veto, the filibuster for anything,
everything.
You can't then say, what's he going to do? What's he going to do?
Yes, you can. People want jobs. They want lower unemployment.
But they then have to be able to make a judgment who is blocking that. If the president comes out and says, here's my job plan, here's what I'm going to do, and Mitch McConnell just says, smaller government, then you can't blame the president for not getting it through.
Americans often want more than one thing. If, let's say, it's
That's
divided government again, Simon, what do you think this president will do in a second term? Does he go for triangulation? He's talked about reaching out to the people, reaching past Republicans in Congress. Now, hey, maybe it'll be Mitt Romney in the White House and all this will be moot. But if it's not, what's he do?
First of all, I think if he wins, he's going to come back with great confidence. And he will be, I think, aggressive. I mean, I think that what we expect of our leaders is to be passionate, to have a vision, and to fight like hell for it. And I think that's what we're going to see.
Aggressive for what? To break bread and compromise with Republicans, or say, forget it, I tried.
No, I think we're past that. I think Barack Obama learned a lesson in 2010 and 2011 that he couldn't give stuff away, that he had to fight harder and bring the Republicans to him. He's not going to go back to what he did in 2009 and 2010. They've made that very clear. I think that's clearly how he's campaigning. He has been really rough on the Republicans in this cycle. He is going after Romney as aggressively as we've seen any Democrat go after any Republican in the last 20 years in American politics. He's a tougher and better campaigner. He's a tougher and better president. So I think what we're going to see next year is he's going to come out swinging for his agenda. He's going to try to bring the Republicans along. And this is what we expect out of our president. Hopefully, they'll be able to come together on some critical issues. I do think one of the most important things is there has to be a more aggressive effort on housing. It's been insufficient. Yeah. I think that among all the other things we could talk about today, all of the above, education, health care, I think housing really matters.
We'll get to more a tougher president in a second term. Belfast, Maine. Robert, you're on the air, Robert.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I believe our very democracy is at stake. With Supreme Court decisions starting from Santa Cruz, Buckley Vallejo, and now Citizen United, we're facing an unprecedented assault from corporate power and money. Obama has taken the only reasoned course to reverse this in attempting to engage a right that serves its purpose in balancing our democracy. What we have now is a failure of democracy. We need to regain our momentum, and that can only be done with President Obama.
Why a failure of democracy? You know, Tampa last week, Republicans say the same thing, but they have a different conclusion about what that means. They want more Republicans in office.
Well, look at what's happening through contested states in the South with people like Polk, the lawyer, who has been able to change the outcomes of election with the unbridled amounts of cash that he's able to inject into these contests that the Democrats have no chance in those states.
Yeah, no question. There's a lot of cash. There's a lot of work on voter turnout. Crank it up, crank it down. And there is something like a 50-50 race right in front of us. Bill Clinton speaking tonight. Barack Obama tomorrow night. The Democrats gathered. There's a lot of enthusiasm here. We'll see how it translates to the country. There was a lot of enthusiasm in Tampa last week. Joan Walsh is with us, author of What's the Matter with White People? David Korn of Mother Jones, author of Showdown. Simon Rosenberg is here from the New Democratic Network. You can join us, 800-423-8255. What Democratic Party stripes do you think you'd see from Obama term two? This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're in Charlotte at the Democratic National Convention. Republicans kicked up their heels last week. This week, it's the Democrats' turn. We're talking about the parties, the Democratic parties, political stripes now, what the party wants from a second Obama term, and what Obama might give. Simon Rosenberg is with us, president, founder of the New Democrat Network, centrist, left, center-left network here in Charlotte. David Korn is here, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones, author of Showdown, the inside story of how Obama fought back against Boehner, Cantor, and the Tea Party. Joan Walsh is here, editor-at-large at Salon, author of What's the Matter with White People. You can join us as well. Would you expect a big liberal agenda in a second term of Obama, or compromise, deal-making? Should he have gone hard to the middle like Bill Clinton did in 94? Should he have been more progressive? What should the Democratic Party stand for in this century, this election year? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. All kinds of response online. Here's Jones. Says, I want Democrats who are willing to stand up. This is Facebook or the web. Stand up to corporate America to protect our environment, including our water, climate, wilderness. Who remembers environmentalism? Motivations writes, Democrats' social justice is picking the pockets of the middle class to buy the votes of the poor. Well, there was a lot said last night. Tonight, it's Bill Clinton. Last night, DNC here in Charlotte, Newark Mayor Cory Booker fired up the crowd with a speech about the Democratic platform and what that stands for.
You should be able to find a job that pays the bills. You should be able to afford health care for your family. You should be able to retire with dignity and respect. And you should be able to give your children the kind of education that allows them to dream even bigger, to go even further, and accomplish more than you could ever imagine. This is our platform.
Newark's Cory Booker last night, they were hooting and hollering in there. Of course, there was all kinds of stuff in Tampa last week as well. Here was, Newt Gingrich with CNN's Jim Acosta. With his criticism of President Obama for remarks, the president was quoted as saying, you didn't build that, in Gingrich going to socialist baloney.
He was giving a straight socialist baloney. You, if you went out and worked hard, this
you
is
really
why.
Think the president's a socialist?
I will, sure he is. Of course he is. I mean, I don't see how you could have any other serious interpretation of it. This president would like government to run everything.
Come on, be serious, says Newt Gingrich. Hank in Boston, thanks for calling, Hank. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Yeah, I'm like... Yeah. The question is, why is it that Barack Obama and other Democratic candidates can't effectively address this mythology that the Republican right wing has created, that that a large portion of society wants to live off the largesse of government? There's this whole mythology about 50% of Americans don't pay taxes, and those that do are supporting those other people. When meanwhile, you know, that includes grandma, you know, who's 85 years old, has no income. And I'm just wondering why they can't address that head on, since it undermines his position.
Well, let me ask you, Hank, are you opposed? Are you opposed to well-off Americans offering some support for poor Americans?
No, absolutely. I think that it's perfectly reasonable to ask those who have more to pay more. And I think that... again, it's this mythology that's being created, acting as if people aren't working hard enough, and business of Barack Obama and creating they have this
nation of lazy living off maybe Republicans. We'll pick it up right here, Hank. Simon, you're very tough on this. You've been writing in the last few days here. You're going after fact-checking crusade here, and you say it's more than just representations by Republicans. You're talking about contempt for truth. Maybe this goes to Hank's point. What's your point, Simon?
Well, I think he's right, and I think that part of what Barack Obama has learned and why I think he's a wiser and better president is that in order to defeat the Republicans, he has to defeat their economic arguments, and I don't know that he actually knew that in the first 2 years. I think whatever the story is going to be in history about whether he was naive or whether he really believed that he could bring the Republicans to the table, I think that he tried really hard to work with the Republicans in the first 2 years. It didn't work. It didn't work for the country. It didn't work for his politics. And so the quick answer is that
you're writing about Republican, what you call contempt, the contempt
right.
of wealth for the non-wealth.
I think what's so disappointing right now about the Republican Party is that they seem to really stand for only one thing, which is protecting privilege of wealthy people. And they've allowed everything else in their belief system to go by the wayside. And so they've become contemptuous, I think, of the needs of everyday people and the needs of the common good in the United States. And it's why I think that they've been lying with such impunity. Because to some degree, it's reinforcing the nature of their plutocratic politics right now, which is making the country less democratic. It's making us less prosperous. We've seen a decline when George Bush was in office and in wages that went on and on and on. And so I'm disappointed. I mean, they talked a lot about a disappointment with Barack Obama. I'm incredibly disappointed with what's happened to the Republican Party and how they've allowed this desire to maintain tax cuts for the wealthiest to overwhelm all of their other interests historically in the conservative
movement.
You don't
give them any sincerity here? I mean, you can hear people in Tampa last week. There's plenty of wealthy people. There's wealthy people here, too, but there's plenty there. You can hear people who aren't saying, you know, this country was built on a whole lot of individual initiative, and the market is the thing that unleashes that.
I mean, this is what I write about in my book. What's the matter with white people is that they don't understand the extent to which government created the conditions that let their families rise, that let my grandparents come out of poverty into the working class, into the middle class, essentially in one generation. That government made decisions after the Great Depression, after the war. We flattened income inequality. We decided that was a bad thing. We raised taxes. Top marginal tax rate was in the 90s until JFK came along. And the tax structure that built the apparatus, that built the middle class, that funded the schools, that funded public universities, that funded the GI Bill. I'm not saying, I would never say that we should go back to 90% top marginal rates, but they have been sold this bill of goods that they had no help, that they did it all on their own.
But has grown too. Right? And the argument is it's just too much.
Domestic spending... domestic spending is at a lower level than it's been since Dwight Eisenhower, since before we had the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the EPA. I mean, Barack Obama has presided over a trimming of government that's, you know, in some ways...
How you measure. People look at the deficit, 20-whatever percent now, GDP.
This is not a policy-driven argument about whether we have a little too much government, we need to ratchet back, or whether we need to go a little further. You just played that quote by Newt Gingrich. This is a mission.
Socialist baloney.
To delegitimize government. And I don't know, get rid of Medicare, Social Security, and to say that this is their view of the world. Why is the economy in a bad place? Not because of subprime mortgages and corporate shenanigans on Wall Street that happened in the Bush Cheney years and may have, you know, even a foundation in the Clinton years of deregulation. They say the problem is government. Government, government, government. And they act as if it's singular. And so what you have to do then is get rid of government. So they don't talk about cutting back here. We need to trim Pell Grants. We need to get rid of this program, but advance that. It is a black and white caricature, which does seem to serve one purpose, what Simon mentioned, protecting the incomes and lowering the tax bills of the wealthy. And so that's why I don't think it's legitimate when they get up there and they say things about Medicare that are not true, and they make this phony argument about that they care about the deficit.
I want to look at that and more. Andy in Wallingford, Connecticut. Andy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm just called to say I really think that Obama is a complete centrist, and the Republicans have turned so right, they make him sound like a socialist. He's moderate as Clinton was. President Clinton wanted to have a universal health system. Obama rolled and took this, you have to be a slave to these insurance companies the rest of your life. Republicans should love him. The stock market's at 13,000 and he got Osama. I mean, I think this whole story is ridiculous.
It sounds like Joe Biden talking to us, Andy, but if he gets a second term, do you want him to become more progressive? Do you wish he would have been more progressive from the get-go? Should he have gone after Wall Street and not brought in Wall Street to his cabinet?
Of course he should have. Let me ask you a question. MF Global, John Corzine who was a New Jersey senator and governor, $1 billion is missing, and the Justice Department can't find anything wrong.
Enough said, right? Andy, thanks for your call. David, maybe this was a strategic error early on. I mean, a lot of the Tea Party anger, and Bill Clinton's here tonight in part to reach out to white working class voters. Yeah. A lot of that anger is in exactly those quarters, a lot of it. Maybe if Barack Obama had gone after Wall Street, you know, instead of throwing out TARP and throwing out the safety net.
I mean, they made a strategic decision early on, I'm not sure it was the wise thing, that the system was collapsing. They needed to prop it up and then move forward, and they couldn't be as antagonistic to Wall Street. And for all that, for saving Wall Street, essentially, and keeping it from further collapse, what happens? He's called the most anti-business president of all time. It is ridiculous, the whole you didn't build that anti-business, you know, theme that they were pressing last week. So he's a guy, again, he's a pragmatist, and he sort of saw the system collapsing. He said, well, let's keep it up in the air. And I think the public may not have been ready for that. There was so much anger, and he let some of it go to the Tea Party. He let some of it just turn into bewilderment, and he lost a good part of the public.
This sounds to me like an issue of whether the party is, or the president is, centrist or progressive. I mean, there was a fork in the road very early on.
Well, yeah, but there was also, it wasn't a fork in the road. It was a fire in the road.
Well, yeah, the bonfire.
So it was a bonfire.
It was a crisis, granted.
And it was very easy for us on the outside to say, you know what? You should have just gone flat out in a populist way and see what happens if the banks collapse.
Well,
I don't know. Some people wanted
maybe
that.
Maybe that was right, but the Democrats got 2010. Bob in Calais, Maine. Bob, you're on the air.
Okay, thanks, Tom, for taking my call. I just wanted to make 2 points. First of all, I've been listening to the Republicans for years saying that the Democratic Party was a party of taxing and spending. And that's the way the government operates. I mean, that's the way any Democratic government operation.
Yeah, but you can tax more and spend more, or tax more and spend less.
Huh?
But you can do more or less of that, right? I mean, you can tax a lot and spend a lot. You can tax less and spend less.
But you can't run the government on an even keel if you don't have enough taxes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to pay the bills, but you pay for the government you lay out. And second, Bob?
Yes, and the second point was that Barack Obama, when he was running for president, said that he was going to fix the infrastructure of the country. And the perfect way to do that was something similar to the WPA. I agree with that 100% because it would give an awful lot of people in the country jobs, not at $26 an hour putting a bolt in a fender, but it would give them enough money to pay their mortgages and feed their kids.
Yeah, it sounds like you're still waiting for some of that or might take more of it. Bob, I appreciate your call. Look, what about the rest of the progressive agenda? I know the White House is on the line. Everybody, the Republicans know it too. They want it. They see the chance, and maybe more than the White House. But there's a lot more here. I mean, Gitmo's still open. People are upset about that. We heard it right at the top. You know, Obama on the Patriot Act and security and drones, civilians dying from this. There's a big progressive agenda here that I, on the security side and more, that I wonder how you look at it, Joan, in a second term. If he gets in there, does he stick with this tough kind of line that he promised very solemnly to close Guantanamo?
That was a disappointment, but he also got pushback from Congress. He didn't get the funding that he needed to do that, so I don't think we can hold him solely. There are lots of things that he promised that he couldn't do by himself, and he didn't get help even from Democrats on that one. So, I don't expect to see much movement. He has turned out to be rather hawkish, and he has turned out to be not so great on civil liberties, and I think that is something that disturbs a lot of us. I don't expect it to change, but it would get much worse under Mitt Romney, so I think a lot of Democrats are fairly pragmatic about that, disappointed, but we need to change the dialogue around security in order to have a president who's less hawkish. It's not going to happen.
David, is that it for progressives? This is the new Democratic Party balance beam?
Well, I think you can pick and choose. Lily Ledbetter, the gay, rights, don't ask, don't tell, gay, marriage equality. I think, there are things he's done that have been not just slightly progressive, tremendously progressive. And then other things he hasn't. I think a lot will be determined by the overall political context in Washington. I think Simon's right. I think he's given up the ghost on trying to deal with any reasonable Republicans because they have shown they're not interested in reasonable. That actually gives him more freedom in terms of having, policy fights in which he can state, this is what I would like to see happen. Because if you're dealing and compromising, sometimes you put your own desires to the side to get something done. You don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah, but people want more than a statement. Yeah. One more here, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Scott, thanks for calling, Scott. You're on.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I think what needs to be considered is both sides of things, okay? I work for a Fortune 500 company, right? An exec recently got let go, got a $17 million golden parachute, paying 15% in taxes. Is that fair? No. Does it need to go back to what it was when Clinton was in office? Maybe not, but it could still be raised. You got to consider also social programs. You know, there are people abusing the system. A colleague of mine, his neighbor is on disability, quote-unquote, because of a hurt ankle. Okay, yep. Could he work? Yes, but he's not. He's abusing the system. This is where compromise needs to come in.
So a little compromise. I mean, be supportive, but be tough. Scott, our time is short, but we've got it. And one more from Charlotte, Queen City, where we sit right now. Alan is on the air. Alan, I'll give it to you. What do you say?
Yeah, I hope that in the next term, President Obama tries to engage the Republicans because they are part of the government. However, if they try to be obstructionist, just to do things on his own, because for 3 years he has tried to bring them to the government and they have done nothing but to obstruct his agenda.
But try to bring him in. Joan, what do you expect tomorrow night? When it's not Bill Clinton, but the President, Obama himself, what do you expect him to do? What's the message? Progressive? Centrist? Come on, everybody, big tent?
I think it's that we've gotten a lot accomplished. That no matter what the media want to tell you, that, you know, you start with Lilly Ledbetter and you go through the Affordable Care Act, which has had problems. But
you see the unemployment, you see the economy, and people want him to look forward as well. Does he look forward and say, I'm going to reach out to you and we're going to crusade over opposition?
Yes, I think he says, we are the people who believe that we're all in this together, and we're the people who are going to go out and convince those other people that we're right, and that yes, there are a lot of obstacles in our way, but that Americans are better than the Republican Party platform. And I think he does look forward that way. I don't think he makes big promises that he can't keep because of the obstruction.
But Simon, people want something big here because they want the economy to come back in a big way.
I think all the polling shows that people want an economic solution commensurate with the size of the problem. They're not looking for small bore stuff. This is what we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. People want more right now out of their government and not less. I think the president I think the president is going to lay out, remind everybody what he's done, the progress that's been made, and then talk in great specifics, I think, about what he wants to do over the next 4 years. I think he does have an agenda. I think he laid it out in the State of the Union in the budget this year. He's laid out by far and away the most detailed plans about what he wants to do for the country of anybody who's in the game right now. And so I think he has an agenda. I think we're going to hear about it tomorrow. I think he's going to excite people in the hall and galvanize the American people, and I think it's going to be the key to him winning the election.
President Barack Obama tomorrow night in Charlotte. Tonight, it's Bill Clinton. The crowd is gathering here in the arena in Charlotte in a big way, and the speeches are on right now. Simon Rosenberg with the New Democrat Network, thanks so much for being with us. David Korn, author of Showdown, thanks to you. David Korn of Mother Jones and Joan Walsh at Salon, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks,
this is On Point.